Political prisoner, author, and radio journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal is facing open-heart surgery in Pennsylvania. Yesterday, we reported that the surgery had happened because that was the current information at the time. It now seems to have been postponed until Monday. KPFA's Ann Garrison spoke to Mumia's supporter and City University of New York professor Johanna Fernandez.
Johanna, it's been reported that Mumia would undergo open-heart surgery on Friday and Saturday. And now I've heard through the grapevine that it's been scheduled for Monday. What's the latest according to your information?
That's correct, although the information is not forthcoming because Mumia's chosen attorney, Dr. Ricardo Alvarez, has not been given access to Mumia's current surgeons. Mumia essentially was able to call his wife yesterday ever so briefly. And at that point, he was very weak and was only able to whisper to her that he would be undergoing surgery on Monday. That's what we know.
Do you know of any response to the campaign to remove the four-point restraint shackles ahead of Mumia's surgery?
There's no response on that front. What we do know is that at least until yesterday, the prison recorded a statement or message for those who were calling on behalf of Mumia. And I don't know the details of what that message was or if it remains on their system. But that's a signal that people are calling, that they're paying attention, that they're being forced to develop and craft a message to essentially tell supporters to step back.
Are you nevertheless still asking people to contact the Pennsylvania governor and other officials about removing the shackles before surgery?
Absolutely. Medically, the shackling of a patient is barbaric. It should be illegal for a hospital, for a nurse, or a doctor to implement a policy that is, objectively speaking, contrary to the health of their patient.
Where can people find the governor's phone number and those of other officials to contact?
They can go to letmumiaout.com for this information.
Today I read in a medical journal that four-point restraints are used for patients with psychiatric illnesses or altered mental status who become violent and dangerous in the emergency department. That's obviously not Mumia, so I think we can assume that this is about punishment and making an example of him. Could you talk about the example the state of Pennsylvania is making of Mumia?
Well, unfortunately, this is not particular to Mumia, although Mumia is a special case. He is a political prisoner who was framed by the Philadelphia police in 1981. The practice of shackling prisoners is a widespread practice across the country and in Pennsylvania for certain. And part of what I've written and what we know is that this is truly an echo of slavery. I mean, the echoes of slavery here are loud and clear. Chattel slavery in the Americas is the institution which, for the first time in human history, produced the global distribution, but also the mass use of handcuffs, shackles, and fetters to bring enslaved Africans to heel. So part of what we see, as James Baldwin has written, is that history is in the present and we're living with history in unconscious ways. Now, every generation, it seems, the American government has sought to make an example of people who dare to fight the status quo, to fight empire, to fight the state. In the late 19th century, it was the Haymarket martyrs, anarchist, socialist, communist, labor activists who were literally sent to their deaths, executed for their labor activism in that period. After that, in the early 20th century, we had the case of Sacco and Vanzetti, two Italian anarchists who were also executed, sent to their deaths by the state for their political activism. And in the post-civil rights and Black Power movement era, the show trial for the state was that of Mumia Abu-Jamal, sentenced to death in the 1980s for the alleged killing of a white police officer. Mumia is a former Black Panther, a muckraker radio journalist, award-winning radio journalist at the time of his incarceration, and wrote a New York Times bestseller, from Death Row, the first book that humanized Death Row from the inside. And in the 1990s, you probably recall that Mumia Abu-Jamal was like the Che Guevara of our time. He was resisting empire from the inside, defying everything that we think of when we think of someone on death row. And this is what the state does. It wants to make an example of people who resist the state, to send a message that this is what might happen to you if you dare challenge the highest authority in the country. So the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the largest police organization in the world, has made a poster child of Mumia, the man that they hate. And the Fraternal Order of Police has essentially funded many of the judges in Pennsylvania. Most of the judges who've heard Mumia's case in Pennsylvania have been funded by the Fraternal Order of Police. That's because in Pennsylvania, judges run for office. And so there's this very incestuous relationship between the DA, the Fraternal Order of Police, which is the union of the police in Philadelphia, and the whole carceral system. And this is a political case. It involves a veteran Black Panther and a white police officer. And in this country, there's no middle ground to killing a white police officer. Of course, we know that Mumia was railroaded in the courts, that there is new evidence that has emerged that the prosecutor bribed one of the witnesses in the case, not just one of the witnesses, but a key witness. The key witness in the case, Robert Chobert, was bribed by the prosecutor. And how do we know that? Because in the last 3 years, what has emerged, because Mumia's case was in the courts and there was recovery of evidence from the prosecutor's office that led to the discovery of a letter, handwritten letter by Robert Chobert, the key witness in the prosecution's case in the original trial. And in that letter, Robert Chobert asked the prosecutor, the then prosecutor Joe McGill, "Where is my money? I was promised money and I've been writing to you about it and calling the office to no avail. What do I have to do to get the money? Where do I have to sign?" So that's all to say that the state is invested in keeping Mumia behind bars. It's invested in keeping Mumia behind bars because of what Mumia represents politically in this country. And their time is up, I think, because of the emergence of this new evidence, but also because of this moment of exposure of police violence, brutality, and the homicidal character of the police in the United States. And Mumia's case is organized around corruption and tampering with evidence on the part of the police to obtain a conviction of a former Black Panther. And so I think that the state is running scared and they're going to try to do everything within their power to make sure that Mumia dies in prison before they're forced to account for all of the violations in the case and for framing him.
A lot of people who've heard and admired Mumia's brilliant radio journalism, mostly on Pacifica Radio, still don't know what's wrong with the testimony of police officer Gary Wookshaw and hospital security guard Priscilla Durham. Could you explain that?
Yes. So Gary Wookshaw was the police officer assigned to lord over Mumia at the time of Mumia's hospitalization in 1981 when he was shot by police. We believe it was the officer who died at the crime scene who shot him, Daniel Faulkner. So because Mumia was shot at the crime scene, he had to be taken to the hospital. And at that time, by the way, he was also shackled. The cop who was assigned to him, Gary Wookshaw, filled out a report and said the Negro male made no comment. Three months later, during the trial, in a room filled with other police officers and in the presence of the prosecutor, Joe McGill, he said, "Oh, I now remember that Abu-Jamal said, I shot the MF-er and I hope he dies." So that's Gary Wookshaw. The night that Mumia was hospitalized and underwent surgery, that officer said in a report, the Negro male made no comment. And that statement that the officer made was corroborated by the attending doctor at the time, who said that Mumia was so weak and so impaired that he could not have made a statement, but that he was there tending to Mumia throughout the night and that Mumia said nothing like what was alleged by Gary Wachshel and by the other officer, who also said that she heard Mumia incriminate himself and say that he did it.
Yeah, I think that was the hospital security guard named Priscilla Durham.
Priscilla Durham, exactly.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say right now?
You know, I think that Mumia's case always raises larger questions about the barbarism and problems with the criminal justice system. Only 5 years ago, Mumia fainted at the prison infirmary and was rushed to the hospital. And months later, our doctors determined that what was wrong with Mumia was that he had hepatitis C. And at that point, we had to sue the prison, the Department of Corrections of Pennsylvania, to force that institution to give Mumia the hepatitis C medication he needed to survive, right? Because hepatitis C is a disease of the liver that leads to death. We went to court for 2 years, and belatedly, Mumia got the hepatitis C medication he needed, and he lived. And as a result of that, other prisoners across the country are citing his case and getting the medication they need to survive. What Mumia's case is raising once again is a question of the barbarism of the criminal justice system and its racist character and the echoes of slavery within it, with this problem of shackling, which is not just a problem for Mumia, as I said previously, but one that other prisoners face, including pregnant women who are shackled during labor. And I just want to recall the words of the Russian novelist Dostoevsky, who said that the degree of civilization in a society can be judged by entering its prisons. And I just want to leave your listening audience with those words, because we've been talking about the fact for years now that the United States has 5% of the world's population, but imprisons 25% of the world's prisoners. And I think that the problem of incarceration, its racist character, is really a reflection of everything that's rotten with American society. But prisoners, because of an unrelenting law and order campaign that's been carried out in this country over the last 40 years by Republicans and Democrats, are not seen as human beings, to our peril, because when you erode standards of freedom anywhere in society, as we see happening in the prisons, eventually that constriction of freedom comes back to affect all of us. So this is not a problem that's narrowly about imprisonment and prisons. This is a problem that raises questions about liberty and freedom for all of us in American society, and whether we are going to continue to allow the erosion of liberty and freedom indefinitely until it's no more.
And that was City University of New York Professor Johanna Fernandez.